KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
There's a lot going on in the summertime in Alaska. Longer days and warmer weather can mean fishing, hiking, and camping. But today on Talk of Alaska, we're going to take a look at organized events around the state. Things like live music, local food festivals, and cultural celebrations. What do these events bring to a community? How do they shape the place? We'll talk to event organizers and ask you about your favorite events on this Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Are you responsible for a growing team of healthcare workers? Now's the time to invest in your team. When you enroll by June 30th, the Alaska Primary Care Association will cover the full cost of training and apprenticeship programs to help your employees get certified, advance their skills, and stay within your organization. Visit AlaskaHealthcareCareers.com to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Primary Care Association.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Talk of Alaska, and I'm Hannah Floor in for Lori Townsend. Today we're looking at summertime events in Alaska. How do they impact the economy of a place? How do they change the quality of life for residents? And how do they help retain or even attract residents? What goes into putting together an event that people are excited about year after year? I've got two guests in the studio with me today. Radhika Krishna is the executive director of the Anchorage Downtown Partnership. That's a nonprofit that is working to revitalize downtown Anchorage in various ways. And one of those ways is through holding all kinds of events in the city. Hi, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I've also got J.J. Harrier, the longtime chair of the Anchorage Pride Parade. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And on the phone, we have Michael Howard. Michael is the executive director of Alaska Creative Economies, and that's a nonprofit that supports Alaska's various creative industries. That includes the music industry, which we're going to hear about today. Michael, can you hear me? Got you on the phone?
Yes, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And folks that we've got, our guests, are mostly focused on Anchorage. So I really want to invite listeners from all around the state to call in and talk about what they've got going on in their neck of the woods. If you have questions or comments, you can call in at 907-550-8422. You can also call in toll-free 1-800-478-8255. And if you don't feel like talking live on the radio, you can email us at talkofalaska, that is talk@alaskapublic.org. All right, let's start off with a little overview of what all of you are doing. Michael, you are with Alaska Creative Economies. That supports creative industries. What can you talk a little bit about what that support looks like?
Sure, I sure can. I think I would describe it as, I think it's kind of a land holdover, you know, everything that we're going to talk about here on this program today, you know, and to sort of just raise awareness that things like live music, things like, I'll throw some of our buzzwords out, things like our music ecosystem, that they don't just exist in a vacuum. And so all of this excitement, this economic activity, this buzz, I mean, this absolutely wild summer that we're headed into, you know, these live music events and like things that Radhika and her team puts on downtown, you know, they exist within a framework of laws, regulations, permitting, insurance, and we'll get into some of that stuff. And so we're sort of here to sort of, you know, advocate for this sector, specifically our music sector, and really lean in and just be like, look at the benefits and value of this, the economic value, the cultural value. What can we do to support and understand and encourage more of this?
Okay, so making sure that it's not just sort of happening as it happens, but you're really helping the industry grow a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. And Radhika, what about you? Talk a little bit about the Anchorage Downtown Partnership. I know that there's a lot of advocacy for the downtown area. How do events fit into that?
Yeah, and I'm so happy to talk about that. And there's no better way to kick off than how Michael started, which is to say, yes, we're a nonprofit. We've been around since 1997. We manage the only business improvement district in the state of Alaska. So events are one piece of what we do, but we also provide a lot of supplemental public services. We do the sidewalk snow clearing downtown. We maintain all of those public trash cans. We do daily trash pickups. That's why you never see a couch hanging out in a corner downtown, because we get to it before you see it. So I think, I know that's less fun, and talking about insurance and permitting is less fun than getting straight to the events, but there really is this big piece of infrastructure, because that's what makes an event experience great, is when you can safely walk to it, even when it's snowing, when you have a facility or public facility or park that's suitable for hosting a big event. And so there's a lot that goes into the back end before somebody who's a guest comes in and has a great experience. So we do all ends of that, maintaining those public spaces, advocating for improvements to them. But then we also are very honored to get to do the fun stuff. So we have an events director, Chris. Shout out to Chris, who puts on more than 50 free community events a year. And that includes our Live After 5 Thursday concert series. Some of Anchorage's biggest events, like Summer Solstice, is coming up in 2 weeks. New Year's Eve, we have concerts in the park on 4th Avenue on Fridays and Saturdays. All kinds of stuff like that. So we are very happy to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have more questions. I have plans to talk about the logistics that go into those events, you know, porta potties, trash cans. There's a lot in the back end that I think people maybe don't see. JJ, talk a little bit about your work with the Anchorage Pride Parade and how that sort of fits into planning for events here in Anchorage.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can trace Pride here in Anchorage. Pride being June is typically celebrated for Pride Month as we commemorate the Stonewall riots in New York. And every June there are celebrations all over the state. We can trace them here in Anchorage back to 1977. That was the first Pride Parade. It was a special one for that first one, because, you know, not many people attended, right? They counted, I think, 12 to 13 attendees in that parade. Many of them wore paper bags on their head because they didn't want to be recognized by their neighbors or by their employers for the fear of getting fired. We've come a long way since then. The parade and the festival here in Anchorage have historically been hosted by Identity and PFLAG as two organizations who are advocating on behalf of the LGBTQ community. The last 3 years, I've been working with the Alaskans Together Foundation to put on the parade in downtown Anchorage. And it's always a lot of fun, gets a lot of spectators, a lot of people to come out and celebrate, you know, the queer community, and to, you know, remember that, you know, the LGBT community here in Anchorage is one place, is not only a cultural and economic driver for the state, but it's also a time to celebrate our diversity and get people outside of all ages to, you know, to celebrate that.
For folks who haven't been to a Pride celebration before, can you describe a little bit what folks could expect if they were to attend?
Lots of color. It's, you know, and the cool thing about that, Hannah, is that, you know, year after year, we're seeing more Pride celebrations pop up all over the state. There are, we counted last, 15 communities that are celebrating Pride during June, which is great. A lot of color, a lot of activity, a lot of celebration, a lot of advocacy. And typically you're going to find people of, you know, all walks of life who are out to celebrate who they are. And that's great, right? And our allies, straight allies, if you will, come to celebrate that as well. So the state is really vibrant during June.
Yeah, I want to hear a little bit more about those Pride celebrations around the state. But first, tell me, when you say lots of advocacy. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more what you mean by that. What does that look like?
Pride being a celebration is also a time to look at the temperature in politics, what's going on around rights that involve the LGBTQ community. This year is particularly hot. And so the parade in general, you will typically find that while it's a celebration, you are going to see a rally in some cases, where if rights are being threatened, then people are going to be expressing that. Mm-hmm. And that has historically been the Pride Parade in general, and it's no different here in Anchorage. So while I organize a group of about 50 groups, those are LGBT groups, those are organizations, those are corporations, each of those groups are going to come with their own energy. Yeah. And so the parade really is a time to showcase that and to kind of get an idea of what is happening at not just the state level, but nationally. The cool thing about the parade is it does lead into the festival at Delaney Park Strip, which is hosted by the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association this year, along with Hike Entertainment. And they're putting on the festival where there's lots of booths, and those booths will give you a lot more information about what is affecting the LGBT community.
And I just want to clarify, when you say this year is hot, you're not talking about the weather.
I'm not talking about the weather. No, we have our rights are on the table right now, and it's being felt. And people are angry. They're confused. They want to express that. While the festival and the parade will not, just be, yay, we're here, we're gay, get used to it. There's going to be a lot more energy this year, I think, and people are going to be expressing that.
Okay. And curious if these events are family friendly.
They are family friendly. I can speak for the parade and the festival that they are. I think it's important for parents to have conversations with their youth about what they're attending and what type of event they're attending, and maybe have that conversation so there's not any confusion. But yeah, they're both family friendly events, and there's lots of it's spectacular to see so many people out celebrating diversity.
Yeah,
it's really what it's about.
Thank you. And then Michael, you had said earlier, you said this absolutely wild summer we're going into. Why is the summer that we're going into absolutely wild? Are you talking about the number of events?
Generally speaking, yes. And I'm one of those that has just been around the scene here for decades, and I don't think that I've ever seen this many events as is what I'm seeing this summer. It just feels like we're developing, growing, feels like we're just pushing the boundaries of, just the excitement of all these destination festivals. And they're all sort of evolving. Homer just did their Harbor Fest last weekend. You've got the Blackwater Railroad crew out putting on Hatcher Romp. It's just like sort of every direction. Look at the size of Creek Bend's programming this summer. Look at the amazing summer lineup for the Concert Association, also the Downtown Partnerships events. You start to add these up, and it's just it's something like I've never quite seen before. So it's exciting.
That's interesting. If folks want to call in, reminder that we are really excited to get questions or comments. You can call in at 907-550-8422 and also call toll-free at 1-800-478-8255 or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Radhika, I know that there are a lot more events happening downtown this year. I think you had told our producer beforehand 5 times as many events happening in Town Square. I'm curious to hear from both of you why you think there are so many more events this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. There are so many more events happening this year, and I want to give full credit to all of those event promoters because, we are continuing with what we've done for many, many years, right? We have Live After 5, we have our, Fridays on 4th, but really what's happening this year is that the city has created a fee waiver for Town Square Park so that park is used, because that park was created for large-scale events. Mm. And so if we're not using that park for large-scale events, it doesn't feel activated. It doesn't feel the way the center of our city should feel. And as soon as they did that, folks just came out of the woodwork. And I just want to give such big credit to both Zanita, who's organizing the new Friday night market that just happened. We just had our first one this last Friday. It was also June 1st Friday, and the museum was packed. So it was the happiest I've felt walking around downtown in many, many months. I think we all feel like that. It was maybe the first sunny day in the summer. It was the most organically activated I've felt like downtown has been since I've started in this job 2 years ago. And that's because it's not just us organizing these events. There's a lot of other folks. Mm. And I think everyone has heard about Nelly coming to Town Square Park in July and Vanessa Carlton. And those are huge showdown shows. So those are all new events that are coming for the first time. And yeah, I just like can't tell you enough how much it warms my heart to see so many folks come in and do new events for the first time this year.
I have a follow-up question because I am having a really hard time imagining Nelly at Town Square Park. For those not in Anchorage, Town Square Park is one square block. That doesn't seem enough to contain an entire Nelly concert. How's that going to work?
You know, that's a question for the event producers, so I don't know. But generally, when we do big Town Square Park events, we also take up E Street. So I think there's ways to expand a little bit beyond that block. The PAC is right there, and obviously that's an enormous event facility. So there's streets, there's plazas. The cool thing about downtown is you can block off streets and have block parties. So there are ways to get beyond that. But then really getting back to kind of Michael's comments, I want to say that what's also really special about these, about all of the events, the Pride Parade and all of the events that we do downtown, is that it's not just an event in isolation. People stay, they go out to a bar, they have dinner, they go shop at a small business. And so the economic effects of bringing so many people together who are so happy, who are in community together, are really beyond just what the 2 hours or 3 hours of an event is.
Right, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Let's pivot to the economics of events. So is one of the reasons that the Downtown Partnership is working on all of these free events, Radhika, is that because of the economic impact to the area?
Absolutely. There's a couple of reasons, and I would say one is that public spaces are meant to be used by the public. And so we see that as our responsibility to sort of stimulate that activity, to be the first in, the first person, first group using a space like that and planting a flag and being an anchor for some of these public spaces that I think have had some ebbs and flows in activity over the years. But then absolutely, especially in the off season, we don't necessarily think about it that much in the summer because summer feels organically activated in a lot of ways. But once you get to September or October, pedestrian activity drops off. Even though people are inside, they're going to restaurants, they're just not walking around from place to place as much. And that's when events like we do Trick or Treat Street in the fall, we do Small Business Saturday and Holiday Tree Lighting in November, we do New Year's Eve in December. These are all free community events. I think it's so important to have a free family-friendly event where you can take your kids downtown, watch the fireworks. It costs you no money, but maybe you stay and go out to dinner or meet up with friends and family. These things sell, parking garages are full, restaurants are full. You can see the economic activity.
Gotcha. And we're going to put a pin in that conversation about the economic effects for a minute because we have Linda from Palmer on the phone. Linda, you wanted to talk about Vanstock. That's a music festival celebrating the vans. Is that right?
Yeah. Hi. My name's Lindra, and I'm the founder and organizer of Vanstock. And it's exactly that. It's Alaska's first van life and music festival. Really, so many people come up to Alaska to kind of celebrate this land. It's, you know, a place where it's been on people's bucket lists for so long. And this is a place to bring all those travelers together as well as locals.
What does a celebration of van life look like exactly?
Yeah, our festival is on a 420-acre bison ranch in Palmer. We have a 6.5-acre and a 7-acre field that's a beautiful, lush barley field, and that's for community camping. We've structured the camping to be in rings, and so you can walk around each ring, meet everybody, kind of make those new connections and friends. And then we have a main stage area with 14 bands. We have a big vendor field for food trucks, vendors, classic car show, vintage band show, as well as a whole area for self-development and workshops to learn about living on the road, camping, overlanding Alaska, stuff like that.
I was going to ask about that self-development. It seems like a great opportunity for folks who are interested in van life to see how other people have got their vehicles outfitted or learn about strategies. Does that happen a lot?
100%. From my experience from being on the road, I've lived in my vehicle for 7 years now, and everyone has a story, and so there's usually a catalyst that pushes someone to want this life really focused on freedom and living outside. And so the self-development aspect of yoga and breathwork and learning about conflict resolution and journaling and artwork and how to express yourself, I think, is really nourishing for this community as well as everyone who will be attending.
Those are aspects that I don't know that I would have thought about right off the bat. That's interesting. Follow-up question about the bison. Are they right there with all the vehicles?
No. The bison, it's a subsistence farm. So the owner, Adam Boyd, it's Boyd Bison Ranch, he provides bison meat for a lot of people in the Matanuska Valley. And so they are in their own enclosure. They are viewable, but they're not a fully domesticated animal. So it's more enjoy them from afar. No one will be directly interacting with them.
Okay, got it. Well, thank you so much for your call, Andrea. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Absolutely. And if you are excited to talk about something happening in your neck of the woods, give us a call, 907-550-8422. You can also call toll-free at 1-800-478-8255 or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Going back to the economics, Michael, you've done a lot of work looking at the music industry and how that affects the economics of a place. Can you talk a little bit about your research, what you found from that survey that you did?
Sure. Yeah, we piloted a study last year that was called the Greater Anchorage Music Census. So we looked at Anchorage and surrounding areas of Palmer, Wasilla, because including those includes a lot more of the picture. And so looking at economic impact, you know, generally speaking, this is one of a couple studies that we've worked on the last couple years. So just to like really drill it down, it looks, you know, to define it first is helpful is that when we're talking about our music ecosystem, we're talking about all these live music events, everything that we're talking about here, the live music in town square, ticketed shows, free shows, all generating economic impact. But in traditional economic impact studies, what we call the independent music sector, it's not measured. It's typically embedded within the NAICS research codes for like hospitality, lodging. Most of it shows up as restaurant and bar activity. So there's sort of this movement that, you know, we're kind of a part of with this work around the United States that's really starting to parse this out and say, hey, again, this is economic activity that's not really seen. It's kind of invisible or it's miscategorized. So generally speaking, you know, the Greater Anchorage Music Census served as both just a real hands-on just needs assessment, and then in addition, some economic impact numbers that we've gathered. You know, it's sort of around over $200 million in economic impact for the region. We know that musicians generate about $5 million in income. This is sort of a supplement to sort of this growing, you know, there's some existing studies like Americans for the Arts do, and I will throw a number out there that Radhika could think of. You know, generally speaking, we know when people attend a like a free event in town square, they spend somewhere between $30 and $40, and then you can add the economic multiplier, add another 50% onto that from that spend. And so, like, if Radhika knows their attendance numbers for the summer season, you know, you could be looking at a $500,000 impact from I'm just making that up from what I think Radica has said about their numbers. So it's economic impact, but it's, the other thing that I would throw out there is, you know, yes, we want to measure the economic impact, but we know that that's only about 1% of the economy. It's small. This is technically small stuff when you're looking at Alaska's economy, but what if music wasn't happening? What if there were no music in town square? What if it just went silent and these events weren't happening? You know, Radical and other folks will talk about how do we activate our downtown? How do we vitalize downtown? How do we attract and retain young people? And it comes down to this, it's a vibrant, independent music scene. And so again, that's sort of our angle. Like we're trying to just see this more, see this for what it is. And, you know, like I say, kind of highlight it, call it out, learn how we can support it.
Right. You can't just think about the events as the amount of dollars generated. It's also about what it brings, the character of the community and how it shapes that. We have got another caller on line one. This is Taylor from Bethel. Taylor, I have a note here that you wanted to talk about the Pride Festival in Bethel and the drag shows in Bethel.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about what you've got going on over there.
Sure. So Pride is really exciting and fun in Bethel. The group that I oversee at Tundra Women's Coalition is called Teens Acting Against Violence. And it's a group of teens that like to help the community and plan events for the community. TAV has been putting on a Pride parade since 2019. And this year in 2025, we were contacted by a drag artist who was really excited about bringing drag to rural areas. So we're working with Miss Gay Alaska, OSHA Violation, to put on what we all believe to be the first drag show in Bethel. So we have a Pride celebration on July 11th, which will be just like a community gathering where we can share food and commune with each other, do some crafts, and sort of get to know each other. And then on July 12th, we had to shift to July just for schedule. So we'll have a little bit of a late celebration. But on July 12th, we will all meet at Bethel Saturday Market to make posters and signs for our Pride Parade, have a Pride March around the town around noon. And then that evening from 7:30 to 10, we'll have Bethel's first drag show at the Cultural Center here in town.
And what inspired that drag show? Why do it for the first time?
Well, I was contacted by just like other providers that focus on queer youth and uplifting queer voices. And OSHA Violation actually reached out to us at TWC because we are one of the only queer safe spaces in Bethel. And as Indigenous performers, folks from Fairbanks really wanted to bring their art to where they're from and to communities that maybe haven't had access to things like drag. And so since Bethel already has like a vibrant Pride history over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, whatever that is, it seemed like a really great fit. And we've been able to work together to, work with performers, work with our local college, we're a victim services provider. So it's been a really great opportunity for different parts of Bethel and different parts of our service providing community to, you know, show our support and have these safe, fun events that highlight how wonderful and diverse our community is.
All right. And can you tell us again when that is happening?
Absolutely. We've got our community gathering for everyone to meet and greet on July 11th. And then on July 12th, we have our Pride March and our drag show.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Taylor. We are going to get to a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about organizing those Pride festivals in rural Alaska. You are listening to Talk of Alaska and on the air today, summertime events. And a reminder that you can call in at 907-550-8422. You can also call toll-free 1-800-478-8255 or send us an email, talk@alaskapublic.org.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play, clean, go. Removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
You are listening to Talk of Alaska. This is Hannah Floor, and today on the program, summertime events here in the state. And I have two people here with me in the studio. I've got Radhika Krishna with the Anchorage Downtown Partnership. I have got J.J. Harrier with the Anchorage Pride Parade. And on the phones, Michael Howard, who is the Executive Director of Alaska Creative Economies. And before the break, we heard from somebody, Taylor in Bethel, who was helping organize the very first drag show for Pride, a slightly late Pride event there in Bethel. JJ, I want to talk a little bit about Pride outside of the big cities. Do you have a sense of what it's like to live in a smaller place? Have you spoke with organizers around the state trying to plan Pride events that are in areas that maybe are going to draw fewer people, be a little bit less welcome in some ways?
Absolutely. You know, I first got involved with Anchorage's Pride back in 2013, but a couple years after I began as a volunteer, we had this question, right, of who else is hosting Prides throughout the state. And so we began kind of a deep dive project and getting organizers together for, you know, a call once, you know, every couple of weeks to learn about the Pride in their communities and what they're putting on and where they need support. And, you know, I was blown away. I was blown away by how many people were willing to pick up that lift. And, you know, Pride events are fun because you don't have to stick to the playbook of just put on a parade or a festival. You can really just have fun. And as you could tell from Taylor in Bethel, you know, you get creative. You know, I've seen drag queen bingos. I've seen, you know, like game nights.
I'm sorry. What is drag bingo?
Drag queen bingo is what it sounds like. So the one that I'm used to attending is, you know, you go with a group of friends and you play bingo. And if you win, you get escorted to the back of the bar usually, or the venue, and you get dressed in drag.
Oh.
And then you come out and you perform for the audience, and they, you know, typically they'll donate some money, and that money will go to a queer supporting organization.
Okay, so if you're going to participate in drag queen bingo, you have to come ready to be in the spotlight.
Exactly. Get ready to entertain. So, you know, there's a gamut. And so it's cool when these rural communities are putting on events because they can get really creative and put on their own flavor, right? And that's what we've seen. You know, this I'll go through kind of a list of the prides that we know of in the state so far. The last weekend, Seward held its pride through the Seward Pride Alliance. Always a huge attendance down in Seward, as well as Skagway had a pride celebration last weekend. This weekend, Homer's going to host their pride weekend. And then the following weekend, June 20th through the 21st, we see prides in Kodiak. Kodiak's going to have a variety show and burlesque shows. Soldotna has their pride in the park. And Talkeetna is bringing back their pride. So they have their Pride Fest revival. And those are ones that are coming up just before the end of the month. Typically, Anchorage saves their pride week, unofficial pride week, for the last week of June. And I can go through those events at a different time. But to answer your question, it's good to have a collaboration of like-minded individuals who understand what it takes to put on an event, especially during Pride Month, how to recruit volunteers, you know, how to get the word out, how to use, you know, marketing as your best friend, you know, whether it's social media or flyers. You know, we've seen a lot of Pride flyers being the only thing that will really promote a Pride event before. So having that group of individuals and organization of like minds helps.
Yeah, I really want to get to the what I assume are enormous logistics behind events around the state, Pride and other events. We have a caller on line one that I'm going to get to first, though. This is Mariah in Fairbanks. Mariah, you are putting on an Angry, Young, and Poor music festival. Is that right?
Hi, yes.
Hi.
Our Angry, Young, and Poor music festival is shorthand AYP. It's annual, happens every year, and it's been going on since like the early 2000s, I believe, but it's been passed down from local volunteers all the way down to our little clique this year. It's going to be on July 12th, and it goes from 11 a.m. to midnight, and we have about bands chosen this year, and they go back-to-back.
Sorry, I think we lost you when you said the exact number of events. Can you repeat that?
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
It's one event. We've got 16 bands performing on July 12th. That's a Saturday. And it's going from 11 a.m. to midnight, and it usually happens in July somewhere. It's been going on since the early 2000s. This year we have a mud pit planned, so we'll have some fun in the mud. We also have a free clothing closet that we've curated for through donations this past year. People can come in and look at our free clothing closet, and we also have a canned food drive planned. We're going to be organizing a canned food drive at the event this year.
Is there any way for people to clean off between the mud pit and the free clothing?
Oh, yes, we'll have, thank you for asking. We have, water available. Usually it's in the form of like a hose,
okay.
So you might be cold, but AYP is dirty and grimy.
I was going to ask about the title of this festival. I'm sure there's a story behind it.
Yeah, so since it started all those years ago, I don't know the exact story, but my interpretation has always been that this is for all of the angry, the young, and the poor of Alaska to come together and have accessible music. Everything is free. We often have free food also. It's just to make everyone's voice heard and yeah, just have art and community as accessible to everyone as possible.
Mm, okay, yeah, making sure that folks don't need to spend a lot of money in order to have fun.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The event is entirely put on by volunteers, so nobody makes money, not even the bands. We do have a lot of vendors there who will hope to make money. Hopefully people can come and support those guys.
Okay, and tell folks again if they're in the Fairbanks area, when is this happening?
It's going to be in Esther, Alaska on July 12th, 11 to 12.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for calling, Mariah.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about what makes for a good event, and Mariah segued nicely for us, talking about that accessibility. How do you guys decide what events to hold, what are good ideas, and how much to charge for them, or how accessible to make them? What factors go into that?
Well, traditionally, we've never charged for any events because we're one part of the ecosystem, right? So there's definitely a place for paid events in downtown, and I think what makes a strong ecosystem is that different folks are doing different things. Because if we did every single event in downtown, we'd bring in one audience, our events would all feel the same, and that's not what creates a sense of vibrancy. I love hearing from the callers because you can tell that everyone hosting events is bringing different audiences in. They're hosting events with different flavors. And so that's all part of it, right? Like, we know what we can do well. We know what we have the capacity to do. We have one person doing more than 50 events, so we're sort of at capacity. We are not going to have the ability to do drastically more things than we're doing right now. And so growing the whole ecosystem, growing the amount of things that are available to anyone in any given week is going to take new partners coming in. So at this point, our goal is to help make the system easier to navigate for everyone. So that might mean, like what we talked about, making the permit fees more affordable so that new folks feel like they can afford to come in and do a new thing. It might mean making the system easier to navigate and answering questions. We're always available to pick up the phone and talk someone through the permitting process if they've never done it before. So it's just, how can we be a good partner in the space? And I think that's what I'm so grateful about is, you know, I hadn't actually met JJ before this, but it turns out we know all of the same folks because this is not a big ecosystem. Mm. So part of it's just being a good partner and neighbor and saying, hey, you're doing a really cool thing. My job is to support you, not to get in to stepping on your toes. It's to figure out how I can add on to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. JJ, can you talk a little bit about that collaboration? What does that look like for you?
Oh, it's huge. You know, I'm not involved as much with the festival anymore, but, you know, the planning process for the Anchorage Pride Parade and the Anchorage Pride Festival starts really early because the first thing we look at is, you know, if we're going to pick this weekend in this small little window of the summer that we have in Alaska, you know, who else is hosting events? We don't want to take away an audience that may want to enjoy a couple things or have, you know, historically gone to all of those events. And so we get on the phone, we start, you know, doing the Google search on who's hosting what. Solstice used to bump up against Pride a little bit. The Scottish Highland Games, you know, it's hard to avoid big events when you're planning events for the summer. But with the right partnerships and the right conversations, you can say, hey, we're hosting this event from this time to this time. You know, when is yours? Or maybe we'll push it back a weekend, you know, before. And you start having those kind of organizational conversations.
And how much of this work is you reaching out to other people and being like, hey, can you help me out with this thing? How much of it is folks on staff? Where are you finding those volunteers? It seems like it involves a lot of work from a lot of people.
It is for myself personally, absolutely. The Pride Parade sees about 600 participants. Those are people in the parade, and then you have the spectators, the audience, so to speak, who come to watch the parade. And so I have a group of 20 volunteers this year. These are very dedicated volunteers who are committed to getting the job done, right? And leading the parade safely into the festival. And I'm sure, you know, 4A's and Hike Entertainment could tell me that they have the same or not, if not more, that many volunteers who are chipping in. Volunteers are everything for an Alaskan event, and in my case, because we are a nonprofit working to put on an event for the community. And so it takes an army.
Okay. And Michael, how do you decide what events to promote, what events to move forward with? What are the factors that go into that consideration?
Yeah, I think there's some flavor and some, I would tie it to our mission and strategy. So we're looking at things like creating opportunities for our local musicians, looking at things like tying in music with the tourism industry. Personally, and both through our work, I think that the future for Alaskan musicians is going to be tying in with our tourism industry. All ages is a huge part of the mission. We know from lived experience and from the music census that the need for dedicated, accessible, all ages spaces, a place where the rock bands can cut their teeth and grow and develop, is a part of it. You know, we've identified, we know that there's some gaps in what we call the venue ladder that our local bands need to grow into, where you grow a following and grow into bigger audiences, stuff like that. So we sort of look at, you know, specifically leaning heavy into kind of advocating for stuff like the all ages spaces. I think leaning into just also music is very tied in with the alcohol industry in Alaska. And I think we've been becoming aware of this as a community in recent years, just that, you know, the Title IV laws and regulations shape where and how music can be presented. And I think part of, for example, to kind of tie it back to the economic impact stuff as well as in kind of the number of events going on is, you know, as soon as we opened up and had changed Title IV a couple of years ago so that the breweries can present like 4 events per year, I think that's part of just adding to this kind of explosion of the number of events in the summers, stuff like that. So kind of really looking at the policy level.
Interesting. In the past, were breweries not allowed to hold events? What was that change from?
There were restrictions on the types of live entertainment that certain permit holders, so that a brewery permit has different regulations than, you know, a full liquor license restaurant bar permit, you know, that would control like the closing hours and then whether there can be sports on the TV or live bands being presented. And so in 2022, I believe it was, we revised Title IV. And then there was another very recent update just about a month ago, clarifying there were some permitting fees that even on top of like now the breweries that were hosting their new 4 events per year, now this new House Bill 182 has clarified and waived that no additional permits were needed to host those events, stuff like that.
Okay. We are going to take another break. You are listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Hannah Floor, and we are talking about summertime events here in Alaska. When we come back, we're going to hear from a caller who is in his second year with the Kodiak Kelp Festival, and we are going to hear about some of the things going on with that.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Are you responsible for a growing team of healthcare workers? Now's the time to invest in your team. When you enroll by June 30th, the Alaska Primary Care Association will cover the full cost of training and apprenticeship programs to help your employees get certified, advance their skills, and stay within your organization. Visit alaskahealthcarecareers.com to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Primary Care Association.
For more than four decades, Alaska News Nightly has brought you award-winning statewide news. From Dutch Harbor to Prudhoe Bay, from Metlakatla to Koktovik, Alaska News Nightly covers every corner of Alaska, keeping you up to date about the issues you care about most. Join me, Casey Grove, for Alaska News Nightly, weeknights on your local public radio station.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Hannah Floor, and today on the program, summertime events in Alaska. And we have got a caller on the phone. Nick from Kodiak is going to tell us a little bit about the Kodiak Kelp Festival. It is the second year for this festival. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Nick, can you talk? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. Can you tell us just a little bit about this festival?
Yeah, so Kodiak Kelp Festival started last year as a three-day event that we held mostly at the Kodiak Island Brewery. Actually, all of it last year was at the Kodiak Island Brewery. The idea behind the Kelp Festival was, number one, to do a little social licensing around kelp farming so that we can spread awareness about the design of our farms and where they're located and different products that are coming out of kelp, and then also celebrate local artists and just local ideas of ways that you can use kelp. We had sourdough bread with kelp in it last year. Some people made some locally grown alaria that was used in a miso soup, so you had like a fresh kelp miso soup, which really changes the flavor profile of it. And then a bunch of local artists that do kelp-related art, anything from pressings to just, you know, scenic backgrounds that include kelp were showcased, lots of jewelry and things like that. And we had almost 500 people come to the brewery over three nights last year to listen to music one night and just really get more involved with the kelp industry that's happening in Kodiak. So we decided to expand on it this year and make it a full week-long event and spread the love around town a little bit more.
And you had told me that there was even kelp-flavored beer and kelp cocktails.
Yeah, so they did kelp-inspired cocktails because the Kodiak Island Brewery is also a still. So they made some different types of kelp-inspired cocktails. Basically, you could have both mocktails and cocktails. They had like a salted kelp rim on the glass, really tasty. They made a bunch of different stuff, and we all also included it in Bloody Marys, which it does really well. And then they took some dragon kelp, which was propagated by me at my farm, to our knowledge, it was the first time that it's ever really been propagated in a farm setting in the world. So that was pretty exciting. And they took about 300 to 400 pounds of that and used it in their process to make a kelp ghost beer.
Kelp ghost beer. What does that mean exactly? And can you tell us about people's reactions to trying the beer?
Yeah, so it's ghost, G-O-S-E. It's a type of a sour beer. I think it's one of those beers that if you like sour beers, you really like it. And if you don't like sour beers, you don't. What it does have is a lot of foam or head on the top of it. That's kelp is used in a lot of breweries for that kind of stuff to really promote the foam. So a lot of people really liked it. It's had a real warm reception. This is their third year or their third batch, I believe, of making it. But that was the first time that they used that type of kelp.
Okay, and do you think the brewery is going to be producing more of that at times other than the festival?
Yeah, I believe so. It's popular enough that I think that they will continue to maybe do smaller batches. I know that there's some desire to try some different types of beers as well. And people are just always playing with kelp in different ways. Double Shovel has a cidery here in Kodiak, and they're making a Captain Kelpy cider. It's not out yet. It'll be released on the first day of the festival, so I'm really excited to try that out.
Okay. Well, that sounds fun. All right. Thank you for calling, Nick. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Bye. I want to talk a little bit, we were talking about what makes for a good event. I want to talk a little bit about how events can change the character of a place and maybe attract or retain people in a place. What do you think that the events here in Anchorage have done for folks living in the city?
I know for the Pride Parade, it's always a time for celebration with the community, really, identifying, understanding, and celebrating the queer community. And I know from an economic standpoint and having conversations with the Chamber of Commerce and the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation that people who are looking to move to Alaska, who want a vibrant city that has all of the accoutrements of a vibrant city, are looking to see if Pride events are being hosted. So that's good to know. That's good to know for us, as we move through events each year, we're always kind of curious of that, because from an event planning standpoint, you're kind of in the Fast and the Furious and you're just doing the job of the event and getting the feedback from the community, but not always from those who have just moved here or are new to the Pride events, so it's good to hear from, a city perspective that it's important.
What about you, Radhika?
I love that answer, and I think it's easy for us to sit here and talk about events, and I think there's nothing that beats that feeling of being at a really great event when you are out and it's sunny sometimes and you are with 1,000 of your best friends. I think that we've just heard from so many lovely callers from all around the state doing such cool events that make me want to go to every one of those events. And I think one of the things that we're all doing is trying to make Anchorage feel a little bit cool. I think we're used to kind of talking about Anchorage as the least cool part of the yeah. state. And I think that's not true. And part of what we're trying to do here is make it a little bit cooler. Because for all of the folks that live in the city, we spend 80% of our time in the city. No matter how outdoorsy you are spending 80% of your time in town. Yeah. And so loving the place that you live and having something that you can take your visiting friends and family to or go out on a weeknight to see is such a big part of quality of life and enjoying the place that you live. And so feel very honored that we get to play a small part of that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Michael? I feel like I moved here from Southeast, from Petersburg, and one of the things I heard over and over and over was that people had a hard time missing live music in Petersburg. What do you hear from people about the ability of live music to make a person want to stay in a place?
Sure. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, it's good to recognize that we have, especially in the summer, what we're talking about is there's this implicit thing with a lot of the events going on where, in because the setting for Anchorage is Alaska. So a lot of these events, it's implicit that it's about getting out of Anchorage for the weekend to these really amazing, beautiful settings. The music becomes the soundtrack for just the most amazing backdrops of wilderness and landscape in the world. But kind of just like Radhika said, at the end of the weekend or what have you, you go back to town, you go back to Anchorage. And so definitely, just like Radhika said, leaning into, hey, if, you know, our identified priorities, you know, out of studies coming out of Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, major focus is quality of place. Major focus is attracting and retaining a talented workforce. When one in four jobs in Alaska are held by folks from out of state, when the workforce is more mobile than ever, the phrase, the name of the game is quality of place is everything. And numerous reports from the Brookings Institution, from Sound Diplomacy, from many other cities, consistently rank a vibrant, independent music scene and arts and cultural amenities, including the Pride events, as a major driver and attractor of talent. And so, like when we led in earlier, it's important to understand that things like live music do not exist in a vacuum. It's a thing that we need to continue to understand and invest in the same way that we would make investments in other services, other arts and culture. You know, as we're looking at the Anchorage of the future, what does that look like in a vibrant, independent, exciting music scene year-round? By the way, there's some opportunity there. We're talking a lot about summer, but there's a lot of potential here, and I think JJ and Radhika are hitting on a bunch of important points.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, I'm curious if there is an event in your area that you think really defines the character of the place. Give us a call at 907-550-8422. You can also call toll-free 1-800-478-8255. You can email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. I want to do a little rundown. First, I want to hear specific events that you guys are excited about around the city and state. And then I also want to do a quick little rundown here of some of the other things that are happening around the state. The Valdez Theater Conference is coming up. Actually, I think it's going on at this very moment. One of the things that's happening there is a performance of six different 10-minute plays coming up in a couple of weeks. There's going to be midnight baseball games in Fairbanks. That's during solstice. There is a several hundred-foot car launch that happens in South Central Anchorage. I hear that the parking for that requires you have to park like miles away at this point to get to it. 4th of July, there are all sorts of wild things that happen all over the state. I think, Radhika, you were telling me about something in Nome.
Bank robbery on Front Street.
Yeah, I'm
highly
sorry.
Recommend.
Talk more
right.
about that. What's the bank robbery?
You'll have to go to Nome to find out.
Okay. also on the 4th of July, there in Nome, there's apparently a stilts race, but it notes on the website the participants have to bring their own stilts. There's a marathon where you run up a mountain in Seward. In my hometown of Petersburg, we have a giant firework display where they also have fireworks made out of coffee creamer. That's just some of the stuff going on. And I'm sorry, you know, I wanted you to list off the things you're excited about, but that is the We Are Out of Time music. So thank you so much for coming in. I have been talking with Radhika Krishna, with J.J. Harrier, and with Michael Howard, all here on Talk of Alaska. And big thanks to audio engineer Chris Hyde, editor Annie Feit, producer Madeline Rose, and on the phone, we had Ava White helping us out. Thanks for joining me for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, Inn Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska, from Sitkanap to Castle Cape. Today, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet. And Wednesday, southwest winds